This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Half past three, Rock Chalk Sports Talk, new FM 101.7, 1320 KLWN. So Eric Skoglin, pretty good last night in his MLB debut. 6 1/3, 2 hits, no runs. The Royals get the win. Let's welcome on from Baseball Prospectus, Kansas City, and now a fiancé. Or is it different for? He is a fiancé. Is the woman a fiancé too, and the man? But they're both fiancés, right? I think they're spelled different, but they're pronounced the same. Either way, I don't care about that. What I want to know, David, is what did you do to this poor woman to convince her to spend the rest of your life together?
You know what? She's got to be messed up in the head. I don't know. but, you know, what can you do? I've tricked her, and now I just have to wait and see if she figures out her mistake before it's too late.
Well, congratulations, man. Very happy for you.
Thank you.
So we can talk love on another time, or another show another time. But Eric Skoglund last night, pretty impressive. What'd you think of his debut?
Yeah, that was, wow. not what I was expecting. When the Royals called him up, or when we kind of figured out it was going to be him, saw the Tigers lineup, and you thought, lefty against that righty-heavy lineup that can really hit, no thank you. And I was ready to just write off his major league debut as a bad performance because it's a bad matchup for him, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes out and throws 6 1/3 shutout innings with 2 hits allowed. And I didn't have to throw out his performance because it was unbelievable. Now, there were some times that he kind of had major league debut jitters. The first inning was a little bit rough. I think the Tigers missed a couple pitches, and part of that is they don't have much of a scouting report on him. But he still got the job done. And, I mean, him walking off the mound, pointing to his parents, all that, it was that really tugged at the heartstrings. It was, you know, I don't know if this is a good or bad, or a good thing or a bad thing, but it was kind of the signature moment of the 2017 season so far. And it was a nice reprieve from, you know, just kind of being frustrated by baseball, because it was a really cool story, and it was fun to watch.
So he makes the start in place of Danny Duffy, and now he's going to get another start later this weekend. But with the Danny Duffy news coming down, strained oblique, out 6 to 8 weeks, how does that change the outlook on this season?
Well, I think logically it kind of puts an end to the season. And I know that's a terrible thing to say on May 31st, but, I mean, really, his team was floundering with Danny Duffy, and now they've lost their best starting pitcher. What are they going to do? Are they going to be able to make any kind of run to get back to even .500, let alone contention? I don't see it. Now, that says if Eric Skoglund can do what he did last night for the next 6 weeks, well, okay, we'll talk. But I think that this season is kind of just one of those years, and it's a little easier to stomach one of those years when 2 years ago it was one of those other kind of years. But still, it's frustrating. My biggest fear, honestly, is that they do find a way to hang around. And they've got 36 games left before the All-Star break. They go 21-15, 22-14, something like that, which is really good, but not like amazing or anything like that. If they do that, well, then they're kind of hovering around .500. And all of a sudden you start to say, well, they're going to get Duffy back around the trade deadline. That's like making a trade without having to give anybody up. And they'll hold as a mediocre team. And I just hope they don't do that. I hope that either they make a crazy run and they're not just in contention, but, you know, in a playoff spot, or they just don't have false hope. But, you know, it's a tough blow. You lose your ace, and it's hard to come back from that. I don't care who you are.
No, it seems like you're being realistic about this situation, but and you say what you want them to do, what you want to happen. Do you think that's what they will do? I mean, what do you think they're thinking internally?
Well, I think ultimately, yes, they will get to the point that I'm at, and that most people are at. The problem, I think the Duffy injury, in a weird way, could actually slow them down, because I think that they will look at that and say, if we can just hover around contention, we'll have Duffy back, we'll be able to make a run with him. And I actually could see this, you know, making them trade a little bit later. Not that they were planning on trading early. Tayton Moore's made like 9 or 10 trades in his whole tenure as GM before the month of July. And I think like half of them or more than half of them have been for cash. So, you know, it's not like he's making any big deals. Now, again, he hasn't been in this situation before with pending free agents and all that. So maybe that's a different story. But I don't think that we're going to see any real movement anytime soon. You might see some roster clearing moves. They've got some 40-man roster issues. So, you know, maybe Peter Moylan is shipped off for an A-ball flyer arm or something just to clear a 40-man spot. But I don't think you're going to see a dismantling anytime soon.
Talking to David Leske, Baseball Prospectus, Kansas City, here on New FM 101.7, 1320 KLWN. So what is the timetable in your mind? Like, is it a situation where they're going to push it to the 11th hour?
Probably. It's fluid, because if they go out and they lose 10 in a row, I think that they're not. I mean, these guys aren't stupid. This regime, I mean, they were smart enough to build a World Series winner, so they're smart enough to realize when, you know, it's over. I don't see it happening. I think this is probably a pretty mediocre team. I mean, what, they're 15 and 13 in May. That's kind of like a mid-80s win pace. I had them at 86 wins. They're kind of playing like we expected them to play in May, but they dug themselves too big of a hole in April. And so I think they'll probably kind of trade wins and losses for a while, and that's going to hold off on the trading. So if they do what I think they'll do, which is that, my guess is somewhere around the All-Star break is when they'll say, okay, we're still 6 games under 500. Now we're 8.5 games back, whatever it might be. Now it's time to get started. But I don't think we'll see anything until early to mid-July unless they just tank between now and then.
If they were to begin selling, like, who's the name that you think that they're going to hold on to the longest? Who's the one guy or maybe a couple of guys that you think they're going to look at and say, you know what, I know we have the chance of losing this dude after the season to free agency, but we like our chances of getting him to stick around?
Well, I think the guy they hold on to the longest is probably Hosmer, and it's not for that reason. It's because I think that they will not get the offers that they think he's worth. And so they'll say, we'd rather offer him a qualifying offer and get the draft pick for him after the season. I don't know if that's right or wrong. But I just don't think there's a huge demand for Eric Hosmer. So he's the guy I think they hold on to the longest in general. But I think the guy they hope they can get re-signed is probably Lorenzo Cain. And that's just based on reports. He wants to be in Kansas City. The Royals like him, although I've heard they don't like him for more than 3 years. So that'll put a little wrench in things. But I think that they'll be hesitant to trade him, even though he can probably bring back the most of any of the pending free agents. I think your best trade chip is probably Kelvin Herrera, just because you get a year and a half with him instead of half a year. But I think that they'll hang on to Hosmer the longest, but Kane's the guy who I think they'll be really hesitant to deal because they think they can keep him after the season.
It seems like it's kind of a catch-22 hanging on to Hosmer, because if you do hang on to him because you didn't get the offers that you wanted, I'd imagine you're still going to at least exhaust every avenue you can of trying to get him to commit to Kansas City long term. But in doing so and saying that no, that these offers aren't enough, aren't you almost setting a price tag for him to where he can look back and say, well, you said I was worth more back then, so you can't say that I'm worth less now?
Yeah, in a way, absolutely. Although my guess is the Royals' price tag for Eric Hosmer is way more than it should be. And I've told you this before, I think Hosmer's value in free agency is much higher than in a trade, because a team will look at him and say, we can bring out the full potential. We can fix him.
Right.
Whereas in a trade, they've got 2 months. You know, they don't have time to tweak his swing and turn him into the monster that I think everybody knows he can be. So, yeah, I think you're right. But I also think the Royals look at it in a way and they say, look, we'd like to re-sign you. But we think you're going to get $50 million plus as a free agent. So we're going to give you this qualifying offer. You go sign elsewhere. We'll take the comp pick, because that's better to us than the draft, than the trade piece that was offered to us by the Yankees or whoever it was. And they'll be happy to get that draft pick. I don't know if it's the right move. Probably not, the way the Royals develop their draft picks. But, you know, I think that's kind of the direction they'll ultimately go. That's just my guess, but it's a very Royals way to do things.
David Leske with us on Rock Chalk Sports Talk, New FM 101.7, 1320 KLWN. Something we talked about a little bit last week kind of the revolving door out there in right field between Jorge Bonifacio and Jorge Soler. Well, it seems to have come to a bit of an end, at least recently, as Jorge Bonifacio has been the guy in the lineup for the better part of the past week and a half or so, and he's starting again in right field tonight. I know Ned Yost refuses to commit to him being the starting right fielder, but he is, right? Like, Jorge Bonifacio is your guy in right field.
Yeah, I mean, if you've started every game in the outfield for the last 2 weeks, you're the starting right fielder. Sorry. And I know Ned doesn't want to put a label on it, but let's be real. It's interesting to me, actually, that Soler's not playing tonight at all, and that they're, you know, with against lefties, it's kind of been Gordon and Moss have sat, and Soler and Bonifacio have been in the lineup with Perez at DH and Butera catching. And Perez at DH, Butera's catching, but Alex Gordon's in the lineup against a lefty. And that's kind of a different arrangement than I was expecting. And I don't know if that says more about Soler or if it says more about them wanting to try to get Alex Gordon going and not give him two more days off after having, what, two and a half days off for paternity leave last week. So that's interesting to me. But, yeah, Bonifacio is the starting right fielder right now. And a lot of that, what, he had five home runs on that road trip. It's hard to sit a guy when he's producing that kind of instant offense. But we'll see if it continues. I think you look at a guy like that for 20 or so plate appearances, and you know that there's an adjustment from the league coming, and you just hope that he can adjust back, because if he can, you've got yourself a big league regular. If he can't, then you at least have an answer for next season. But right now, there's no question they have to play Bonifacio because he's hitting so well.
Yeah, you have to play him over Soler. That makes sense. I think the hairier discussion comes to what Alex Gordon's value to this team is at this point. And it keeps coming back to, well, yes, he's struggling mightily at the plate, but you can't deny the talents that he has as a left fielder, especially with that arm. I guess, though, when you couple it all together, because we try to separate the two, but they are one in the same when it comes to a value that you provide as an everyday player for this team. Like, what is Alex Gordon's value when you balance it out between how putrid he's been as a hitter combined with the fact that he's still an above-average defensive player?
Not much. Although it helps that they've hit him. They put him at the bottom of the order, so he's hitting ninth. You know, your number nine hitter is not doing a whole lot of damage at the plate. And he's been a little bit better lately. Let's keep that in mind. If your number nine hitter is not doing a lot at the plate, it's not a huge deal. It doesn't help that your number one hitter is also a complete zero. But that's another topic entirely. So, you know, Gordon in left field hitting ninth isn't a huge issue. He does work some walks still. He still gets on base. I mean, his on-base percentage is basically the same as Mike Moustakas, which I think a lot of people would be surprised by. So, hey, he's doing something offensively, I guess, but an uncomfortable situation because he's owed a lot of money. He's a franchise icon, and there might be better players on the big league roster right now as far as the lineup is concerned, and so how long do you run with it? I don't know. I think given the money he's owed, given what he means to this franchise, and given what he's done relatively recently, I think you got to see it through a little bit longer, but at some point, I mean, he's probably got to be a backup.
David, I don't know how much you enjoy these sorts of conversations, but we've spent quite a bit of time talking about fighting in sports over the last 24-plus hours with Hunter Strickland. Do you like fight talk? Are you into fight talk, David?
I think it's fascinating. Because
I do, too.
It's funny because so many people have different, like, the viewpoints on what is okay and what's not okay, as far as at least baseball fights, really all sports fights. It's crazy to me, and some people who you'd expect would be all about it are just, you know, putting this line in the sand, we're not doing this, and other people who you would expect would hate it are just all about it. So I love the conversation.
Well, the argument that doesn't hold water to me is that there's no place for it in sports, or particularly there's no place for it in baseball, because if there was no place for it in baseball, I imagine Major League Baseball wouldn't be posting fight videos to their their video page and on YouTube. Like, they put these videos up that say, tempers flare and dugouts clear after so-and-so go at it. It's like, well, there's clearly a little bit of a place for it because Major League Baseball's racking
up. There's a market.
Yeah, they're racking up 1.5 million views in 24 hours on some of these videos. But I think it's fascinating from the standpoint of, we get into the punishment talk. Did this guy, was he punished adequately? Was this guy not punished enough? Strickland got 6, Harper got 4, but Harper's 4 was reduced to a 3. That to me seemed a little bit bass-ackwards, just considering the fact that if a fight doesn't erupt, if Harper doesn't charge the mound, Strickland's probably not getting charged at all with a suspension. So I just wonder, like, for the fact that this guy throws a 98-mile-per-hour fastball at you, if he misses by a couple inches and hits your knee, you're on the DL for the next 2 or 3 months. Meanwhile, Bryce Harper comes at him with a punch. I don't remember anybody ever, like, getting sent to the DL because of the fact that they got into a baseball scrum. It just doesn't make much sense to me.
Mike Moore, who got body slammed,
he got concussed by his teammate.
Is now on the DL with concussions.
By his own teammate.
Yes. Normally I'd agree with you. I think the hitter should get more. The charger should get more games. But in this case, Hunter Strickland is an absolute clown.
No, that's what I'm saying. No, I'm saying that. I think Hunter Strickland should have gotten even more than he did, and I think Harper should have gotten 1 or 2.
Yeah, I'm okay with Harper's suspension. I think Hunter Strickland should have gotten 12 games or something like that. Not there's a precedent for it. I mean, come on. It was 2.5 years ago that you're still seething about.
And all he did, all Bryce Harper did was succeed at baseball. All he did was do his job, and you're mad about it.
And he stared at him around the bases. Okay, I'm sure Hunter Strickland's never stared at a batter after he struck him out. I mean, come on. I don't understand, why is the pitcher allowed to stare down a hitter after a big strikeout? But if the hitter looks at the pitcher while he's running around the bases, getting you in the knee next time. No. Maybe, how about this? Do your job.
Right.
Don't give up a home run. It's like, you know, I understand Bautista bat flip a couple weeks ago against the Braves, and they were down by 5. It was a solo home run to make them down by 4. It's like, all right, you're an idiot. You deserve to get brushed back next time. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, as a pitcher, if you give up 2 home runs to a guy, maybe don't give up a home run and he won't stare you down. It was like, what was it, when the Dodgers celebrated in Arizona in the pool in right center field after they clinched the division? You know what? You don't want them to celebrate? Beat them. If you beat them, they don't clinch. it's pretty simple.
Well, you know what's funny to me is that, you know, this was 3 years ago. Harper hits 2 home runs off this guy in separate games. And he's a relief pitcher, so he doesn't know when he's going to see this guy again. Even if he knows when the series is coming, he doesn't know if he's going to, you know, be put in the game to face Bryce Harper. What's funny to me, though, is this dude's been dreaming about that moment for 3 years, and he did not waste any time. First pitch of the at-bat, he says, you know what, I have been staying up at night thinking about plunking you, and he did it. So I give him credit for that.
He was drooling when Harper was walking to the batter's box. I mean, I think that, look, I guess I respect him for not hide. Oh, he said he didn't throw at him. I mean, if I was Hunter Strickland, I'd say, yeah, I threw at him. He had a home run off me 2.5 years ago. You all saw what happened.
You see what he did to me?
But I guess you can't. I guess you can't outwardly say that, even if everybody knows.
He's David Leske. You can check out all of his work at bpkansascity.com. Thanks again, and congratulations, man.
Thank you, and thanks for having me, Nick.
All righty, that's David Leske. I'm Nick Schwartz, Rock Chalk Sports Talk, New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We got a very special birthday around these parts.